Welcome, Pascal Deschazeaux.
Hi, Verena. Thank you for the invitation.
So, hello, everyone, tuning in again to this podcast series on the quandary of healthcare and how we can find ways to fix it. So in general, there's little controversy around the fact that the systems are broken around the world, and COVID-19 has only made it very visible and magnified the shortcomings in our infrastructure and processes. Based on my own career in the public and private healthcare sectors, I came to conclude that fundamentally our balance between innovation and affordability of that innovation is broken, and that we need to find ways to bridge the gaps between the major five decision makers, patients, providers, pharma, payers, and policymakers. So I'm very excited today to welcome Dr. Pascal Deschazeaux to the podium, as he brings unique views on how to remediate these increasing silo mentalities between the five P's and divides. Pascal has a rich and accomplished career as a physician and business leader in healthcare, and the red thread along his career has always been a focus on innovation and its transformation into medical and economic value. As a trained physician, medical doctor, he brings unique views both from the medical and the pharmaceutical side and incorporates the importance of strategic alignment between the public and private sectors. Of note, he has held executive positions not only in the private life science industry, but also in large academic research institutions. Today, as a French entrepreneur, he is the CEO of the digital health startup Nuclin and the general manager of the Opal Carnot Institute. Welcome again, Pascal.
Thank you, Verena, and congratulations for your new endeavor.
Thank you so much. So I know you and I have had many conversations over the years on collaborations and how we can work better together between academia and private and around projects and studies, drug development. So now where you stand after your very rich, multifaceted career, where do you see and how do you look at value in healthcare, and where do you see potential for value drivers in that complex ecosystem?
Well, indeed, it's a complex ecosystem with a lot of stakeholders, and any of them may have their own definition of value. So for me, it's very clear that value in healthcare is about products and services that will make good to the patients, and sometimes, because they are sometimes forgotten, to their relatives.
Yeah, and I think you have some experiences, right? You talked to me the other day in the 1980s with the HIV/AIDS pandemic, where you kind of, or epidemic, I should say, where you have seen for the first time how both the patient empowerment and patient centricity became important. At the same time, there was the fourth, industrial revolution happening with internet, et cetera. But I mean, do you want to speak a little bit to that patient centricity? Because you said, delivering products and services for the benefit of patients and their caregivers and families. Did you want to share a little bit of your experience from there and what it sparked in your own career and mind?
Yeah, I think we've definitely entered the patient-centered era, but it started a long time ago, and by the way, it started, as you mentioned, in the 70s or 80s. And at that time, there was a conjunction of two phenomena. One was the start and quick development of the AIDS epidemic. The other one was the internet becoming popular as a way not only to communicate, but to have access to information. And it was very clear, starting in the US in particular, and on the Western and Eastern coast, that many patients and relatives started acquiring knowledge about their diseases and their treatments, sometimes more than their treating physicians. So that was pretty new, because it definitely modified the relationship between these patients and their doctors. And this further increased with areas such as cancer and the further development of the internet, and certainly Google played a key role in that new patient centricity.
I'm sure you refer to Dr. Google, right? We all have the same doctor. doctor.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But it's certainly a key actor of that patient-centricity. Yeah.
And we'll come back to, obviously, the whole realm of informatics, health tech, and digital health, because that's where you are operating in right now. And I'm curious to hear where you see digital health and artificial intelligence and others can help, you know, remediate some of the ailings we have right now in healthcare. Before we move that, I want to pick up again on that piece of the HIV experience you mentioned. So it was a huge accelerator for the first time, I think, towards patient empowerment and education and health literacy and bring that to the forefront. And I think that was really a disruptor on its own during that time. What it also did, and want to link a little bit on how academia and pharma can also work better together moving forward in the sense of how can that contribute to restore the broken balance between innovation and affordability we have right now. And I think in many ways that discovery and epidemic around HIV brought academic research and pharmaceutical very close together with phenomenal breakthrough and impactful treatments that were developed and that are benefiting patients today, 30, 40 years later. And so there is a lot of good things that have happened between academia and pharma over the last, let's say, four decades. And so that should continue. And where do you see opportunities to strengthen that further, to leverage synergies, both in terms of time, speed, sharing risks, and timelines between these two partners? Anything you want to share from your experience?
Well, first, as you mentioned in your introduction, and that's a subject of a new company, they are not the only stakeholders. So I'm really dreaming of having 5P project teams developing innovation in healthcare, like these cross-functional project teams you have in pharma. It's very strange to me that having patients, providers, pharma, payers, and policymakers, each of them having a role in the final outcome, that they don't gather as they should do. And probably industry has a responsibility in that, not the only one, but I'm really hoping to see in the future that top deciders in companies really put patients at the right place, which is at the center of their strategies. We're in a patient-centered era, but it hasn't totally transformed the industry strategy. Academia, of course, is patient-centered, at least for those clinicians who see patients every day and who know their needs and their constraints. I'm sure that a number of product or project managers in many pharma companies haven't seen any patient they are developing a product for. And that should start there.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I remember when I was in my decade of pharmaceutical tenure, we started actually secondments of pharma collaborators in hospitals and with caregivers to have that experience and exposure and feel what it does feel for a patient on the patient journey. We're already approaching one of my next questions, like what can be done to strengthen the connectivity between the main decision makers? And I think you're already citing some great examples. And I haven't even thought about 5P project teams along the innovation line, because as you say, pharma does this quite well. I think you have done it well in your academic institutions that you work. You have multi-stakeholder project teams. Yes. But any other ideas that you have on that value chain and kind of how we can remediate the current disconnect and silo mentality that does exist? Any other additional thoughts you have on how to strengthen that?
Well, I think here the issue is not technical. It's really about mindset. If you want to collaborate, and collaborating is going beyond working with somebody to produce something, which is the exact definition of collaboration, you shouldn't have any prejudices about your partners. So pharma and academia should discuss more their own needs and constraints and know the people behind the professionals. I remember a piece of our common experience where you were a senior leader within a pharma company, and I was a decider, a senior manager within an academic organization. And we had a yearly meeting with our teams just to better know each other, better know each one's needs, constraints, and objectives, which were not similar, but the final impact we wanted to generate at the patient's level. And there were absolutely no compromission. Everybody defined very clearly that from one side, there was a for-profit organization, for the other side, a non-profit organization with the same goal of having, at the end of the day, products and services that would improve or prolong the life of the patient. So transparency is absolutely key. And I would certainly invite key opinion leaders, senior or not that senior managers within companies, having informal meetings besides those they have on a regular basis at scientific meetings or within board meetings. It's also about people working together and about personal relationship. And as we talked at the onset about the patient, what would for me be a big progress is having companies building up patients as advisory boards before building up strategic advisory boards. That would be for me the ideal start of a 5P approach. And I'm not sure that a lot of strategies within companies include that approach.
Great. Super. Can't add anything. Very good ideas. On the thing that you said earlier, 5P project teams, I mean, some of the very successful global coalitions across public and private, and there's one big one around COVID right now that brings together pharma companies and FDA and EMA, they have successfully actually project managers and project leaders in place that are kind of neutral, so that are not coming from one of each of the parties, but that everybody at the table would agree, and that actually helps stir things forward and get it done. Because sometimes the first step is to have the right vision and come together, but then is to get work done. And that's often where also then discrepant views and perspective and opinions may become hurdles. So I think that whole terminology of project management, I think when the rubber hits the road, as the English saying goes, is important. So let's switch gears to the modern era of digitization and digital. So where do you see one of them? Because obviously there could be 150 things we can talk about, but where would you start, and what's the most important lever you want to pull to utilize the potential of digitization in general for healthcare?
Well, digital science and digital tools are providing a unique opportunity for me to capture and analyze multi-source and multimodal massive data, both in the hospital setting and probably more important in the real life setting. So maybe one of the ultimate goal will be having very detailed biomedical and real-world data, and have them for the real-world part come from a number of digital tools, and there are plenty of them right now, and use the power of artificial intelligence and machine learning to unveil new biomarkers from these big data. Not forgetting, before doing that, to contextualize these data with determinants of health. We've been speaking of patient centricity, but patient centricity also means a patient living in his or her own environment with a number of external factors impacting his or her health or his or her capacity to be treated properly. For example, having access to a hospital at close distance, being able to purchase the treatment he or she needs, and a number of external factors like and food quality, air quality, water quality, social determinants, personal behaviors. So to fully answer your question, I think that the digital approach is now to be centered around what we call within my company, deep digital phenotyping, which is that combined analysis of biomedical data and deep biomedical data with deep real world data captured through digital tools, contextualized by health determinants and transformed into new biomarkers through artificial intelligence. And the ultimate goal could be, it is the case for my company, to go to up to digital twins. When you cluster patients with similar profile data-wise, you may compare a new patient, a new individual to these clusters and try to identify the cluster that is closest to this patient with the associated power, a predictive power of health events. So there are plenty of opportunities. Once again, patient has to be at the heart of it. And this is what we are trying to do within my company, but many companies are now aware that without the company, without the patient, they can't get to the optimized outcome.
Yeah. Any thoughts how that could help towards quote unquote personalized medicine? When you say, you know, you can have a new patient and then match their profile and their social life, you know, the water quality of where you live. We even know that's not only like the quality in terms of substances, but also bacteria composition and the whole area of microbiome. So it really matters on where you live. If you live in Switzerland or in Paris or in New York, you might have the same ethnicity in terms of background, who you are, but you know, the environment where you live and the air pollution that you mentioned may actually impact the outcome of the treatment that you're taking or the research that you're doing. So I think in terms of personalizing the whole biomedical phenotyping that you call it, like matching, you know, one individual to a huge database and have your AI and machine learning running and it determine certain clusters that could predict certain ways to react to a treatment or the development of a certain disease. So how do you in general lines would see help that towards getting towards more personalized medicine?
Well, first, the approach I've described can be used to develop at state or country level public health strategies. But at a company level, it would help understanding. It's not only at the R&D level, but also within medical affairs or marketing departments. It would help understanding the real life of the patients and what impact that life and the capacity benefit most from the treatments that are developed by the companies. Let's take an example. You may be treated at home with a complicated therapeutic regimen. It is clear and with a lot of different explanations just for you to be administered the treatment in autonomy. The level of literacy will have an impact on your capacity getting treated because you may not understand properly the way you have to be treated. Nutrition, again, access to some basic services, healthcare services, will have an impact. So when you design a product, when you develop a product, you should have that in mind. And by having that approach I've described, of course, it's also for you an opportunity, better selecting patients for your clinical trials. And that's approaching personalized medicine. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, when you get to a digital twin of your sphere, it's a tool for predictive and preventive medicine. And that would impact both personalized prevention and personalized therapeutics. So at all level, the new digital tools and science is helping developing personalized medicine strategies.
The future is bright, I see that.
It is, definitely.
So Pascal, thank you for sharing your thoughts and experience and outlook into the future. So anything else before you conclude that you wanted to share with our audience today?
Well, I think we've covered a number of...
A lot.
It's a call for deciders to put the patients at the center, and for that to collaborate. Let's just give an example, which is a living example of inequality of people in front of a disease. This is what's occurring in the US and in other countries with the COVID epidemic. We see that big portions of a population, and it's not linked to their genetic assets. A big portion of the population is suffering for much more severe forms of that disease. And it's highly probable that it is linked to the social environment. Mm-hmm. And maybe other determinants of health. So it's a call to consider these situations and these facts at the time you develop a product, at the time you develop even marketing a drug, you should take that into consideration.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that, Pascal. I think really with artificial intelligence, machine learning, and other digital tools, we have the capacity right now in the toolbox to process these large amount of data from the external environment of the patients, which beforehand we couldn't. We really didn't have the tools to capture all that information. So now being more precise and help also with inequalities that are out there in our society. So that is a really nice concluding comment, Pascal. And thanks again for joining me on the podium today.
My pleasure, Verena. And thanks for raising that new concept, which is a critical one of the 5 P's.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.